Welcome to Horns Up. I'm Peter.
And I'm Animesh.
And joining us today is Taylor Nordberg, who's part of a gazillion bands. Pretty sure he's used to that introduction, but he's founder of a few, including death metal supergroup Inhuman Condition, who will be releasing their new album, Fearsick, very soon. So, hey, Taylor, welcome to Horns Up. And do you like the supergroup tag?
It's interesting. I'm not, I guess I wouldn't consider it a supergroup myself, but that's just because, you know, to me, it's just me and two of my guys. Terry's definitely a legend, though. So, I mean, even knowing Terry is an honor, and then being in a band with him and being great friends with him and making music with him, you know, it's definitely super. So I guess it is a super group in some ways.
That's a good way to put it, honestly. But, you know, it's just been a year since the release of your debut album, Rat God. And while listening to that, immediately you can tell a huge jump in the production itself. Like, it's far more punchier, cleaner, and that's just how powerful Fearsick sounds. Could you talk to us through the change up in the production and why really that needed to happen?
Well, when we first wrote the music, Jeremy and I were still in Massacre. For those who don't know, the whole first album and half of Fearsick was originally written to be the new Massacre album when we were in the band.
Okay.
Fast forward about a year later, we had to leave the group, and we decided, well, these songs are still killer. There's no reason we should just scrap them. So we said, well, let's just make another band. And then we said, well, everybody's going to say it's going to sound like Massacre. And we're like, well, I guess that's kind of the point. So we said, well, why don't we just call the band Inhuman Condition, you know, after the EP? Then it's sort of like a hat tip, but it's also not trying to, like, say that we're a tribute band or anything. It was like, no, it was the Massacre album up until when we left. Then it was something else. So we didn't really want people to be confused or, you know, say that it's like a tribute act or anything. So we were like, well, Inhuman Condition is also just a great band name. I mean, that's... So we were like, well, let's just jump on it.
Now, when you're talking about this, right, it reminds me of like when Gruesome came out initially.
Yeah.
Like, they just had to say, like, look, we're a tribute band, because it just fucking sounded like death, right? So, yeah. Like, I can totally imagine that. And, like, even after that, I believe they got flack. Like, oh my God, you sound exactly like that. Well,
I mean, yeah, I love Gruesome, and I love all the guys and gals in the band and everything. But it was like, well, I mean, it was a Massacre album. So, anyway, so most of the songs were... all written, drums and guitars were all recorded for the first album and a half. Initial like guitar tracks and drums didn't change between those certain songs when they ended up on Fearsick. I think maybe we reamped them to use the same guitar tone. But all the performances were still from, I guess it would have been 2019 when we first recorded the songs. But yeah, there is a bit of a production change, between the two albums. Jeremy mixed again on this album, and I mastered again on this album. I think it just is a little bit more honed in, I guess. Cleaned up isn't necessarily the right term, because it's still pretty dirty and filthy, and the guitar tone is like real gnarly sound.
Yeah, it's just a bit more toned in is actually the right way to put it. Everything just sounds like as if it's been put through a clarity filter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a little bit sharper, bit more grown up.
Yeah.
Grown up, even though it was only, you know, a couple months later.
Yeah. A little bit cleaned up, but still keeping the grizzliness of the beard.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh my God, there's so many different ways we can go with this conversation, but
that's true.
But I mean, that actually was going to be the next thing I asked to you, right? Because you talked about in a previous interview when Rat God just released that there were still like some 5 songs remaining, and they did sounded like album 2 material. So you did confirm that they ended up, but how did you end up then writing four songs more, right? Or what was that process like at the end of the day? How do you kind of match that quality, which is album number two in a way?
Well, it was interesting because, like I said, the first batch of songs were written at the end of 2019, mm-hmm. which seems like a whole lifetime ago.
Yeah. it is.
So those songs, for those interested, the ones that ended up on Fearsick that were part of the first batch that we wrote for Massacre. I'm Now the Monster was an original one. Wound Collector, Where Pain is Infinity, and King Kong, that was the other one. So those were all part of the original Massacre album. So those all have, like, if you listen to those songs in the context of those songs next to the Rat God songs, they do have a sort of a different, more, I guess, progressive is kind of a weird word to put it because it's still pretty caveman, but it was a little bit more adventurous, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely didn't want to, like, say, well, these five songs aren't as good as Rat God, so let's push them aside. We were like, no, some of these songs might even be better, but they just felt like they fit on the next album. So so jumping back into that headspace, you know, a year and a half, almost 2 years later, was pretty weird because we were writing for a different band, technically. It was no longer Massacre, so we had a little bit more freedom to do whatever we want, make it sound however we want. But we also didn't want to stray too far from the sound we were already making. So I think after we got off of one of our tours that we did within Human Condition, we were all, you know, super charged up and playing real tight and everything. And we said, well, let's just, you know, I'll start writing some riffs. And then a couple days later, it was like, hey guys, I have two songs. And then Jeremy and I jammed and wrote two more songs. And then it was like, all right, well, there's the album, I guess. And then we just decided to do all these covers just as bonus tracks for all of our separate territories. So mm-hmm. we're like, well, there's a whole other, you know, EP ready pretty much worth of material.
Wow. Okay. So that's really quick. It's weird, but you know, all the songs that you mentioned specifically, they kind of, a majority of them bunch up to form the second half of the album in terms of track listing itself. Right, like from King Kong onwards, that's like song number 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Now that we discussed the songs and that you told us all this information, it kind of feels like that was specifically done to make it sound like side A and side B sound a bit different, or is that us or me rather just overthinking it right now?
But it could be a little bit of overthinking, but we sort of wanted to mix up the songs. We did consider maybe doing like side A new songs, side B old songs or something, but we ended up, just the way it worked out is they're pretty much spaced out throughout the album. And we always use, you know, we were like, well, maybe we don't want too much production change happening while you're listening to the album. And I think we got it pretty close. But we always say, well, if you listen to Master Puppets, Battery has a totally different production than the song Master Puppets. If you listen real close, they're different mixes. So it's like, hey, if Metallica can do it on their biggest record, we'll be okay.
Yeah.
And there's a mandatory Metallica reference for today's episode.
Yep.
Oh, well. Specifically, though, I want to talk about King Kong because while listening to it, it immediately... The intro just made me really beam with a smile because I don't know. I think I heard King Diamond there so much so that there's even a faint falsetto scream in there, right? Or again, did I just overhear that?
Well, I can't give away too much information. No, but that one, originally it didn't have the intro on it.
Okay.
The acoustic and stuff. That I think that was added after we wrote the other four songs for the new album, which that intro almost has like a Swedish vibe kind of. So the King Diamond, you know, Danish thing, that kind of makes sense. Yeah, that was sort of just a last minute add just to give the album some atmosphere and we already had needed, a little bit
it needed of a break over there too, like
yeah, work, you can't just beautifully have yeah all on. So the last album had a little bit of keyboards in the song Rat God, so we just kind of expanded on that a little bit and added acoustic guitar, which was the first for us. So just a little spice here and there.
I like talking about the album itself, I also found Fearsick to be far more groovier and chunkier as far as the riffs and the songs go. It's not slower, but you know, while Rat God makes you headbang, Fearsick kind of makes me windmill, if you get the difference between the if you get the difference, right? Is that a fair assessment?
The first album definitely has a more, I guess, you know, all guns blazing, super caveman punch in the face, you know, the whole time. And, you know, I hate to say that this one is mature, because it's, let's face it, we're still the same idiots we were on the last album. But yeah, we definitely wanted to embrace the groove. And I mean, Jeremy is one of the grooviest drummers I've ever played with. So mm-hmm. I think a lot of that has to do with him being a big fan of drummers like Mike Borden and Tim Alexander from Primus. And, you know, he listens to hip hop and that's all big fat groove. So, you know, mix that with some Hatebreed and, you know, Entombed, you know, they're more rock and roll kind of stuff. And then we're like, yeah, let's do big fat riffs. Those are good.
Okay. You know, earlier we were talking about how Inhuman Condition came to be and how you guys ended up writing the songs, and the songs just came to you and through a jam and boom, we had an album's worth of songs. What would you like Fearsick as such to be remembered for, like in this sea of death metal being like that you people discover every day? What makes Fearsick and hence Inhuman Condition, what makes it stand out, and how would you like the album and the band at the moment to be remembered as such? Weighty question, but yeah.
Hopefully it just doesn't sound like anybody else. I mean, I guess having your own identity is just as important as being, you know, good or tight or anything like that. I mean, there's plenty of bad bands technically that had their own sound that, you know, changed music. I mean, look at it, first Metallica album, first couple Venom albums, they weren't good by, you know, technical standards, but they had their sound and no one sounded like them, and then they changed the game by doing that. So I think Jeremy's voice is a super key element to this band. He doesn't quite scream like anybody else I know, and I think having an iconic vocalist is like super key, especially in a genre that's so full of bands that all kind of mix together after a while. I think not being an overly technical band is a plus. As much as I love technical death metal, I mean, I could listen to Atheist and Suffocation all day, but I think we're just all about the riff and trying to have big hooks, even though it's death metal, and you can still have big pop hooks, you know. Hopefully it just gets stuck in your head and people see the artwork and they, you know what it's going to sound like, or they hear the music and know what the artwork is going to sound like. So it was cool having Dan do this second album art for us, because I think that kind of made the whole package come together.
Yep, indeedy. The colors on the Fearsick artwork, I love the fact that you guys decided to go that particular shade of pink.
Yeah, when we started the artwork, Dan did a basic structure of the whole thing, and he gave us, I think, four different color variations, just generically, to see which direction he should go in. And we all kind of unanimously were like, I think the pink is the way to go. It just like had such a cool vibe, and I'm definitely glad we went with it, because I mean, also it's a cool hat tip to Leprosy and whatnot.
Yep. But, yeah.
Just kind of happy coincidence. We were all like, man, the pink, nobody's doing pink death metal, so might as well jump on it.
But, you know, I want to ask you about this, right? Because you're in so many bands and you just kind of talked about having like that caveman sound and kind of distinguishing yourself. How do you kind of decide that, okay, because, and just going back to what you said earlier, just jamming on two songs and coming up with it, well, it seems like easy, or the way you're describing it is so easy, right? But when you take into perspective that you have so many projects, what's your hard disk kind of look like? I want to know.
Well, thankfully, I mean, we're crazy, Jeremy and I have 100 bands, but we don't always have too much going on at once. Sometimes we do. But we try to manage our album releases so they're not all, you know, at one time, or our writing is not all at the same time. Also, we're pretty good at turning into chameleons and just switching on a dime. We actually kind of challenged ourselves with that at the start of the pandemic. We have a studio here that we do all our own productions and everything. And we decided to do a challenge where we're going to do a song written, recorded, mixed, mastered, released in one day. And it happened to be a Saturday. And we're like, we should do Slam Saturday and just write a total suffocation worship song. And I'm like, yes. So this was at like, you know, 7:30, we're having coffee in the morning. And then we're like, we should live stream ourselves saying this so that we're held accountable and that we have to do it. So we did it, and we're like, we're going to write this death metal song, and we'll talk to you in a couple hours and see how it goes. And we wrote this pretty awesome total suffo worship song, mixed, mastered, released, did some artwork for it. And we're like, we should maybe do this again on Monday, but let's do like a Swedish death metal, like Entombed or Grave worship. And we're like, oh, we should get so-and-so from Entrails to sing on it. We're like, oh, and we should get so-and-so to play on it. So we started this, we had this huge cardboard, basically, or paper. And we had all these different genres of metal that we wanted to do, and all these musicians that we thought would be able to get a song and write a part and record it in a day. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, this drummer would be cool for this guy or for this song, and this bass player would be great for the thrash song or whatever. So we did all the, we had 12 different like subgenres of metal. So we did all these songs written, recorded in one day. So we did a Motorhead worship song. We did a like Cannibal Corpse, the Bleeding era worship song. We did a Priest style song. We did a
Which era of Priest? Sabbath.
What's that?
Which era of Priest?
Probably say like 84, maybe like Defenders era, maybe 83, something like that. We did a hardcore like Hatebreed song. We did Bay Area thrash type song.
Did
so
you
we
do a
did
new
like
metal
all these.
Track?
No, we didn't. But we are gonna do another album, probably not in one day, just because that was insanity. It was so much work. We're up until midnight mixing these songs. Like, oh, it's almost midnight. Hurry, we gotta get it out.
In season two, yeah, so will they be able to do this in 12 songs in 12 hours?
It did come out after midnight, some of them, but that was all done within one day. So
listen, if this was done in like the mid or early 2000s, this would have been a reality TV show that aired on MTV or something like that, straight up.
Yeah, well, right now it'll either be a live Twitch stream or it'll be a web series, probably produced by Banger or someone.
Yeah, that would be cool. Maybe we'll have them come down and do the next record. But yeah, we have been talking about starting another record of genres that we haven't hit. So we might do I actually started with a sort of industrial metal one, like Ministry or Rammstein or something like that. And then we talked about maybe doing like a Alice in Chains style songs. We're both super huge Chains fans. A new metal song we talked about, that would be really fun. So we'll see what we can come up with, but we're definitely not going to force those in one day again.
Okay.
But so, anyway, what I was saying before, that's kind of how it, that was a good practice for us to just see what kind of writing styles we could pull off. And we got pretty good at separating all that. I mean, our punk band 4 came about from that whole series. And thankfully, our bands don't really sound too similar, at least to me. And we're trying to make them not sound too similar. Like our bands with our Swedish buddies don't sound anything like Inhuman Condition, and Inhuman doesn't sound anything like The Absence. And our punk band obviously sounds like the punk band, and you know, mm-hmm. So a couple of the bands, I actually play drums and Jeremy plays guitar or bass, just to further, you know, separate the sound a little bit. But yeah, we like to pride ourselves in just being psychos and being able to switch on a dime and, all right, let's start this album. And then when this one is, you know, being mixed or mastered, I'm already starting on the next album for this band. So,
okay. How tough is it mentally to switch on a dime? Like, especially like the notes, the riffs, etc. That's muscle memory. You can learn it. You can have it written down and play it. That's what session musicians do, right? But when it comes to your own projects, as you rightly said, there has to be the attitude or the identity that comes forth. How do you switch being a punk rocker one day and being a death metal guy the next? Does that come naturally?
I guess I always sort of consider it like a minor case of schizophrenia. You know, used to my advantage. Some days it doesn't always, you know, it's not always like a, where we have to switch gears on this day, so it's not usually a huge problem. But in August, I'll be doing double duty. I'll be playing with Inhuman Condition live, and then we're opening for Deicide, who I'm playing with also. So that's going to be a switch on a dime situation. But I've been practicing those two sets recently, and it's a piece of cake. But
wow. I love that.
Well, just we've been playing it so long, thankfully. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's not a super challenge to me. I guess I'm fortunate in that way that I can just separate the projects like that, compartmentalize myself.
Wow. All right. So, you know what? We've spoken so much about Fearsick already, and you've kind of given us such a good kind of background. Let's play a track from it. Which one should we play and why?
Let's do I'm Now the Monster. And because A, it's a mosher, and it's nice when people say, this song makes me want to destroy my living room. Also, that was a song that we've been playing since way back last year when we did our first tour. So we just went out on our first tour ever headlining. Our first album's only 33 minutes long, so we had to add material. So we ended up playing I'm Now the Monster on that tour, on both tours we did, just to fill up the set. And a lot of people were asking, you know, what was that monster song? It's not on the album. We're like, just wait for the next one. So that one kind of has a long, long history with us.
Alrighty, here it is. Here is I'm No the Monster.
you know, you kind of talked about at least the bands that you've been in, and I think I've lost track. So I'm just wondering, A, how do you keep a track of what's happening? Like, you've got some, like, you know, project management system or something that you keep a kind of track of, but also in terms of, like, just the sound, right? Because, like, is there a sort of, like, guitar pedal that comes in with each band that you can kind of plug in and kind of just go in with their aesthetics and just stomp off it as and when needed?
I don't know. People always ask Jeremy and I how we manage all of these bands, and we always say, I don't know. I have no idea. It's just, it's basically just like having one band, but only many bands. So a lot of folks will say, why aren't you spreading yourselves too thin, you know, splitting up your time between all the bands? But it's like, no, I give 110% to every single project. I mean, my candle is burning at both ends and in the middle in a couple places, but it's like, well, you got to do what you got to do. So we all self-manage and we do our own videos and all that stuff. So we kind of self-manage ourselves, and it works out better that way, because then, you know, if something gets screwed up, it's like, oh, dude, I screwed that up. Sorry. Or, oh, dude, I screwed that up. Sorry. And then it's not, you know, we're not blaming management for anything. It's all, Everybody's being held accountable. So it's kind of nice. And it's much easier communicating with one person than having a, you know, somebody that you have to email this guy, and then they email back, and then they email you, and things get mixed in translation. And it's much nicer to just bear the burden and just do everything yourself.
Okay. Doing everything yourself. So that's guitars, bass, drums, sound engineer, mixer, master.
Video editing.
Video editing, shooting, etc. Booking, all of that jazz. Record promoter, record manager, I mean, in terms of labels, etc., etc. Which of these roles gives you the most joy?
Definitely the playing of the music. Playing guitar, for sure. If I could just play guitar and only have to just show up and play guitar, that would be awesome. But it's just so much easier to just do things yourself too. It's a win-win, lose-lose, unfortunately.
Okay, so kind of speaking of record label, right? I mean, Jeremy and you run Listenable Insanity Records, and primarily it's been, you know, your own releases and your side projects. Is it gonna always, do you kind of foresee that gonna be the future, or somewhere down the line, you know, you just add other bands, especially now that you're touring, you'd kind of come across far more bands across, right?
Well, it originally started 2015 or something. Jeremy and I just kind of wanted a sort of a joke label, because we had a couple side projects at the time, and we're like, well, let's just make a funny label to put it out on. And then we'd put out a few of my, I had a grindcore band when I was living in Pennsylvania, and we put out like 20 of their albums. And I think we just decided to put a little bit more time into it. I think when we were doing one of the Gore Gang albums, we had talked, well, the first album we were going to release ourselves, but I think our schedule was just too crazy at the time, so that ended up coming out on Transcending Obscurity. And then the second record is, I think, when we decided to really try and do it ourselves and just see how it goes and see, you know, if we can at least break even and, you know, do the whole marketing thing ourselves and do the videos and do all the digital design and the layouts and all that rubbish. So we just kind of just went for it. And then we decided, well, let's just put out this Inhuman album, because we knew we wanted to own the music. We were like, all of us had been in bands that were on labels and got screwed over and are in debt and don't own anything. And we're like, there's no point in doing that. So we said, well, let's own the songs. We wrote them, we own them. let's put it out ourselves. And if it flops, then hey, whatever, it flops. And if it flops and some other label wants to put it out, then they can buy the rights from us. And so it was kind of like, well, it's a win-win. I mean, regardless if it sold 10 copies or 10,000 copies, we knew the music was awesome. And we were like, well, let's just give it a try. So it ended up being way more overwhelming and way more like positive response than we could have ever imagined. And so we said, well, let's put out the second record. I mean, might as well. So I imagine we'll probably keep putting it out until it becomes too big of a, hopefully it becomes too big of a problem to deal with ourselves. But yeah, so far, so good. Like I said, we were in charge of everything, and it's when things go smooth, it's because of us. And when anything goes rough, it's also because of us. And we know, all right, well, next record, we don't need to do that. We can not spend all this money on that, and we can spend more time and money on this part of the release. So it's kind of a fun learning process, and it's nice that it's our own band. It's not like, you know, we're putting out somebody else's band and we don't have the pressure of their future and their reputation on the line, you know. So we'll probably expand and put out other band stuff in the future, but just to get our feet wet and get off the ground, we'll probably stick to our own projects for now. So I think the Umbilicus album, my rock band, is going to come out on our label as well this year. So
I have to ask you, since you do everything on your own, do you also end up doing the shipping out on your own?
That is, I am the shipping department. Wow. So anybody that's bought anything from our Bandcamp in the last year, that was mailed up, shipped by yours truly.
Wow. So okay. That I'm pretty sure is something you don't want to be in charge
that
of.
That is, that takes, well, around release time, that is a full-time job for sure. So thankfully I'll have Jeremy and Deidre here to help me out with this record as well. But I mean, it's not really more needed to have more than one person doing it, because it's a label and then a shipping, and then I know nothing's getting missed. But it's I'm definitely going to enlist them for this record, because we have quite a few orders to go out next month.
Yeah, and I mean, you kind of touched upon the Umbilicus record. So you've got Inhuman Condition album, you've got the upcoming Deicide album. Umbilicus, is there anything we've messed out? Is there some projects we don't know about that you're currently recording?
New Rib Spreader album just came out, I think. So that's Jeremy and I. Jeremy on drums, me on bass and lead guitar and melodies. So that came out on Extreme Records in Spain. And then we have one other album with that band ready to be released. Then we also have a Eye of Purgatory album ready to be released, which is another band with Raga from Rib Spreader. Then we have another four album that we're just we're in recording now. Our singer is writing vocals for. And then I just wrote demos for the new Absence album. So all of these things may or may not come out in the next year. So no crazy plans for any of these yet, but this is just, you know, things that are on the plate.
So you actually name dropped like who I have lovingly dubbed the most busy man in metal, Raga, because he's just like constantly, I lose track. I think like, I don't know how he keeps track of which albums are coming out and when, because I just think what is it, like three Rib Spreader albums in 3 years at least, I'm sure he's done.
Who knows? He has so many albums, that's I don't even know when they're coming out.
So I have to ask, since you did mention about just your writing process, right? Is it too soon to ask if you already have surplus material for album 3 of Inhuman Condition? Because I'm pretty sure...
I have tons of riffs already. We haven't started actually writing, and I don't think we will probably shouldn't, at least for another year. just because, you know, we've only done two short tours, and then our first full US and Canadian tour will be in August. Mm-hmm. So if we were smart, we would probably try and tour that record for throughout 2023 as well. But like I said, I'm kind of a psycho, so I'm sure I'll just end up writing songs anyway, and we'll just have, you know, the next four albums ready to go.
Because I was like, okay, see, we'll definitely see a new album next year, right?
I mean, hey, anything could happen. If I have my say in it, we'll have two albums out next year.
Fantastic. As we begin to wrap things down, final question to you. How's Rooster doing?
Rooster? Oh my goodness. I'm so glad you're asking about Rooster. She is the sweetest creature known to man. For those who don't know, Rooster is... I live with Jeremy and his family, the Klings, and the Kling family dog is Rooster. She's a golden retriever. She's the sweetest. And there's really no words that can sum up how sweet she is.
Okay. And obviously, because she's named after the song, and since you guys mentioned you were huge Alice in Chains fans, help us settle a debate. Is Alice in Chains metal or not?
I will say that they fit into the metal category whenever they want to. Yes, because they are unbelievably heavy at times. They're also unbelievably beautiful and serene at times, and I think that is why they're one of the greatest rock bands of all time.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I would say they're metal for sure. I mean, how could you not think metal when you hear some of those riffs? It's like devastating.
I'm just smiling. I'm not saying anything.
Oh well.
What side of the debate I lie.
Yep. Long time listeners, let us know if you agree with Taylor, or if you agree with Horns Up, or if you agree with Peter, or if you agree with me, or whoever else in the world. All we know is we all love Rooster.
That's the right answer.
Well, thank you so much, Taylor, for joining us here on Horns Up. I hope this was a good use of your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I feel like Rooster was involved, really. So on behalf of us, thank you.
All righty. And with that is the end of another episode of Horns Up. Yes, it's the same drill. You know how you can reach out to us. We are at hornsuppod.com or on Twitter at hornsuppod. I'm on Twitter at Asmoani.
I'm at Trendcrusher.
And this was Horns Up.
Horns Up, guys.